Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Magic with Zuby. Tonight's episode is going to be about saying goodbye to our dear friends, Khans of Tarkir and Fate Reforged. While they are not going away forever, they are going away in our hearts and in Standard. And what this means is coming this Friday, there is going to be what we call a rotation, meaning that Khans and Fate Reforged will no longer be legal in the Standard format, which I think I may do an episode about talking about rotation and what, you know, is something you should do or something that you can and should do, you know, when rotating out, you know, when should you sell your cards or, you know, should you keep on to them or, you know, stuff like that. What should you buy? I mean, you should definitely buy a lot of sealed boxes, buy as much sealed product as you can. Disclaimer, that is not a good idea. So don't pay attention to that. So yeah, that was pretty much what the interview was about. Just Alec and I talking about, you know, just fond memories of Khans, and then we go off into some other tangents here and there. So, just before we get into the interview, you can now find Magic with Zuby on the Stitcher app. What is really cool about Stitcher is not only can you get it to work on iPhone and iPad, it also is available on Android and Kindle Fire and Nook, I think, too. So, if my three listeners, I think I'm up to three listeners now, if my three listeners, you know, want to get rid of their iPhones and want to listen to my awesome show on Android, you know, you can, boom, go right ahead and download Stitcher and, boom, search for Magic with Zuby because, damn, it is that awesome. Yeah, I mean, do it. I dare you. There's a lot of cool shows on Stitcher like mine and some others. So, yeah, I dare you to download Stitcher and listen to me. I mean, I can't even contain how much I would dare you to do it. So, other shout-outs I'd like to give is to mtgcast.com for, you know, helping me put my show out there for, you know, the listening sphere to listen to, because that's a word. And, you know, it's a pretty cool website. It's got a lot of other magic podcasts on there, too, that are... some of them are pretty good. Some of them are funny. Some are really informative. You know, you've got people on there talking about, you know, how tournament results and, you know, how to build decks and whatever. And then you just got shows that just like to shoot the shit and whatnot. So, you know, definitely check out mtgcast.com and check me out on there too. And you can also visit my website, magicwithzuby.com. And see all the latest articles that I write about and my happenings and ongoings in the Magic community and how just plain awesome I am. So I think you should really check that out too. And you can also find me on Twitter on @MagicWithZuby. And you can also find me on my personal Twitter @Zubatron, ZubaTron. And what else? Oh yeah, Facebook. I haven't used that in a while. Or have I? I don't know. Just whatever. Facebook.com/MagicWithZuby. Check it out. Like the page. Share it. Do whatever it is you kids do on that social media there. Yeah, what else is there? Have any other social media stuff? Got an Instagram. I mean, a personal one that I sometimes post videos, photos of magic cards. Does that count? Not really. Yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, yeah, you can email me if you have any questions at all, or if you want to submit a question to the Q&A, you can email me at mtgzuby@gmail.com, and I will happily read your question on the podcast and answer it to the best of my knowledge and to the best of the ways that I can. Because that's just what I do. But anyways, here's the interview. Hey Hey, man, how's it going?
Good, Zuby. How you doing tonight?
Oh, just glad I'm not working forever. That's what...
I can understand that.
Yeah, man, so how you been?
Been pretty good. Been pretty good. Been hanging in there. Playing a little magic here and there, and enjoying life at the moment.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I didn't even go to Magic last night. I know we were supposed to try to do this last night, but I'm almost kind of glad you canceled, because as soon as I got the message you canceled, I'm like, all right, I'm going to bed.
Yeah, no, tonight just turned into a real disaster area for me, so I'm glad that you were cool with it, because there was just no way it was happening.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally understand why, too. No, it's like, as soon as I saw the message, like, yep, I'm passed out. Like, not even 10 minutes later, I was sound asleep.
Good. You needed the rest, man. You've been working like a dog.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw my tweets, like tweeting in the middle of the night and all that, because I was still at work at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, and... I saw a couple of them the next morning. I mean, I wasn't up, but...
Yeah. Now, I guess to make a long story short, Dell switches are absolute garbage. Yeah.
All right, elaborate on that just a little bit.
Well, we have this big multi-million-dollar project that's going on that was supposed to go live last Friday, April 1st. Mm-hmm. And our switches that are keeping up the new environment decide to take a shit a week before go live.
Oh.
And they're Dell switches, and I've been working, you know, crazy amounts of hours to, you know, try to get them up and running. And the night before, I told myself, you know, I'm going to stay for as long as it takes. And 1:30 a.m. hit, and it's like, these are not going to work tomorrow. And yeesh. So we got escalated to, like, the supposed, you know, top of the top Dell engineers and all that. And they couldn't figure out why. And, yeah, so.
Yeah, for whatever that's worth. I mean, escalation can only go so far.
Yeah, definitely. So today we actually had one of Dell's top engineers come on site, and I had him build the switches from scratch. They brought in new switches. I'm like, yep, you know what? You're going to do it. I'm not even touching this. So if it screws up, it's not on me.
I mean, that's the silver lining here, right? At least you got a fallback plan.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just been – it was just not a fun week. And then, you know, pre-release happened last Friday.
It did.
And you pull anything good?
Well, I mean, I got to go, and really all I did was open a pool. I didn't get to stay for the whole tournament, which was a drag. I got a couple of nice little pulls. I did pull a thing in the ice, which I was happy about, at Westville Abbey, which I'm excited to play in the upcoming standard season. I need a couple of those. And then round one, I did actually wind up winning. I went with a blue. It was actually a kind of a three-color deck. I went almost Esper. The white splash was very, very mild. Round one, I did fine. 2-1, I won that one. And then round two, I wound up losing pretty hard to a pretty aggressive Vampires pool that was just insane.
Ooh, damn.
And that was... That was when I called it a night, because that was the midnight release. And normally I really try to stick through those, but yeah, it was just not happening. So I was just like, I'm just going to pack up my cards and go home. That's fine.
Oh, no, I know what you mean. Usually I'll go to the midnight release and I may stay for a round or two, but lately I just cannot stay for the whole thing. Like, I'm done like 2 a.m.
And really, it's more like the midnight release to me is kind of just more like a novelty type thing. It's like, yeah, I get to open my cards quicker than anybody else. You know, that's just basically the whole reason why I'm here.
So. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, the only things that I pulled that were good was a Sorin, and my promo was the green-white dual land. I forget what it's called. It's like port something.
Oh, nice, yeah. The rare duel?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that wasn't bad. Other than that, I didn't really pull anything great. I did get another dual land, but it was the black-blue one.
Okay.
And other than that, the Sorin was the only good thing, and I ended up not even playing him because the pool of black cards I had were absolute crap.
Ooh.
Like, there was, like, nothing good at all.
Like, that's hard too, because it seems like, you know, just looking at it from a limited perspective, black does seem pretty strong. I mean, my black was, I mean, it was okay, but I mean, it was weird because I really thought black was going to be a super strong color, but even my black was not where I thought it would be, just looking at the the spoilers and stuff like that.
Oh, true. Yeah, it's, I think black was the least amount of colored cards I got out of all the five colors.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I ended up going with a green-white human/werewolf deck.
Okay.
Which I only played the first round, and I beat him 2-0. He was playing an Izzet red-blue deck and just couldn't keep up with all my creatures. And didn't have anything to stop him either.
Yeah, it seems like it's that's going to be a tough color combination. I don't see a whole lot happening from red and blue. I could be pleasantly surprised. But it seems like this format, from what I saw at pre-release, it seems like this format's going to be a little bit faster than I would have first given it credit for. So, and red-blue seems a little slower. So it might be just that can't hang. But
yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I know I'll be drafting it this Friday because my store usually does drafts a few drafts, you know, the first day a set comes out because no one has decks ready.
Yeah.
And all that, so.
We do the same thing, actually. That'll probably be what we even do for F&M, just because, you know, we have a couple of guys that, you know, already have their decks pretty much built by the time they walk in to pre-release because they've done all their pre-orders and stuff like that, but the rest of us just kind of don't. So that first week is typically just draft city around here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now I already got my Eldrazi ramp deck built and ready to go.
It's, oh, nice.
I took out all the, you know, cons and Fate Reforged cards. And I think the only card I really need from the new set are the Deathcap Cultivators.
Yeah, that card's going to be pretty sick in Eldrazi ramp, I think. I mean, just giving you another mana dork to replace what you're losing is going to be helpful.
Yeah, I'm using Leaf Gilder for now just as a temporary until I get a playset of those.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a bad fix. I mean, it's definitely no Rattleclaw Mystic, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it kind of, yeah, nowhere near as good, but I am playing the list where I have, at least I'm going back to four of Explosive Vegetation and Nissa's Pilgrimage.
And, oh, yeah, all the good stuff.
Yep, and I've got three Chandras in there, too. So
Ooh. That
should be a nice little sweeper. It's not as good as Ugin, but it'll have to do.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just the thing, is just kind of finding those replacements. And, I mean, Chandra is, you know, I love Ugin. I don't think there will be too much that will be able to replace him. But, I mean, Chandra's right up there. That's definitely a card that, if that's your only powerful card in your hand with a bunch of ramp, I mean, she can take over a game and end it pretty quick if your opponent doesn't deal with her right away. So,
oh, yeah, definitely. No, but other than that, you know, like I said, I only stayed for one round. And oh, yeah, my opponent who was playing red-blue, the only reason he did was because he got a thing in the ice as well.
Yeah.
And he never did manage to flip it because I ended up just killing him too fast. So
yeah, it's slow. I mean, you definitely have to have a pretty dedicated control deck built around that. And in limited cards, like, I mean, I think Thing in the Ice is going to be a difficult limited card to play.
Yeah.
Just because you've got to have that, you know, just massive amounts of instant sorceries. And really, in this set, there aren't too many instants and sorceries that are all that exciting for limited reasons. So I really don't think Thing in the Ice, like, a lot of people will probably still wind up first picking it, but it's just not going to flip as often as you would in say, Constructed. In Constructed, I think that card's going to be a powerhouse, but limited, it certainly loses a lot of its luster.
Yeah, I really hope that a good control shell comes out. I've been I haven't really had that much time to try to figure out, you know, new decks I want to build. I tried coming up with another elf list for Standard, which is very similar to my other Atarka Elves deck, you know, just splashing red.
Okay.
And it just felt very, I don't know, very boring, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think elves, it needs a little bit of, it needs more dorks, to be honest with you. I mean,
yeah, it does.
Elves is best when you've got, like, the turn one Llanowar elves into turn two, you know, Elvish Archdruid into turn three, just vomit my hand on the board. So, I mean, it's, I don't think there's a lot to like about elves, because Shaman of the Pact is a super powerful card. I just don't think it's quite there to that level.
Yeah, I have to agree, because when I was playing elves in the beginning of Zendikar, I didn't have Sylvan Advocate, so I thought maybe with Sylvan Advocate out, you know, I mean, Sylvan Advocate's really good. It's just, I just can't see myself getting up to six lands that quickly, though.
And that's the thing. I mean, elves begs to be a super aggressive deck. And so, I mean, while Sylvan Advocate is awesome, and if I was going to build an elves deck, obviously he would be an automatic four of. But, you know, you're looking to have so much pressure by turn six that your opponent is virtually dead at that point. And, so, you know, he just doesn't quite, I don't think he quite lives up to his full potential. But even as a 2/3 vigilance for two, I mean, it's, you know, obviously something an elf deck would want. So I would still think he would be a four of in any elf deck you'd want to build. It's just, you're probably not turning him into a 4/5 that often.
No, I can't see it. And now with fetch lands gone,
yeah, that makes it harder.
It's going to be a little bit harder to get the lands you need. I mean, there is Traverse the Uvenwald,
or the really bad Evolving Wilds.
Well, yeah, I mean, it gets a land in your hand. I mean, the only good I see it is really just being for mana fixing.
Yeah, but, and, I mean, it's fine for, honestly, like, I think it's in the set for Delirium.
Yeah.
Just because it's one of the few easy ways to get a land in your graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are a whole bunch of other ways you can do it. But really, I think that card is really only there for maybe for limited. I don't know. But, I mean, it seems like it's one of the few easy ways to get a land in your graveyard.
Well, it doesn't put it in your graveyard. It just puts it in
your hand. I'm thinking of the... Traverse the Uvenwald is the one green... that can become a tutor later in the game, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking of the actual land. What was it? The bad Evolving Wilds. Pay two, tap, sack.
Oh, yeah. The shitty land.
I don't know. I heard Uvenwald, and I think that's something Uvenwald or something like that, and that just didn't click. My brain's not working properly at the moment.
Oh, that's all right. My brain hardly ever works, so... So I understand that. No, I can't remember the name. I know I got some, and I'm just looking at it like, this is a second. I wouldn't even play this in limited.
No, and I mean, really, like I said, it's you know, my whole argument that I made a second ago, it's really only there for Delirium strategies.
Yeah.
Just because it gets a land into your graveyard, but there are so many better ways to do it. And if I'm paying, you're not even ramping at that point, because you're basically paying three mana to get a third mana, or no, this is not good. This is terrible.
Yeah, definitely. Trying to think anything else happened. No, I didn't go to Modern last night, obviously. Mm. And I did go to Modern the week before and played my Delver deck again.
Oh, yeah, you got a new piece of spice there with the... did you take a look at the news as far as the banned and restricted list goes for Modern?
Oh, yeah, the Ancestral Visions is unbanned now.
Ancestral Visions unbanned.
Yeah, I'm not sure... I don't know. I mean, I'll definitely test it out, but I'm not going to invest in it yet.
No, I mean, you know, it's definitely not as powerful as it used to be, because it was busted when Bloodbraid Elf was a thing.
Yeah, because of Cascade.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where it gets super busted, and I think that's why Wizards feels comfortable unbanning it now. But I've been watching recently a lot of people playtesting with Ancestral Visions, and it's still, even if you just suspend it on turn two or turn one, just the inevitability that I'm going to be drawing three cards here in a few minutes is pretty stinking powerful.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Like I said, I may try it out. I'm not going to probably invest in it right now. I'll be curious to see what some other lists are looking like before I do that.
Yeah. I am super excited about Sword of the Meek, just because that was a was a deck that I fell in love with. But and I've been watching a couple people play it. I was actually, before you called, I was watching Pascal Menard just put up a playtest set of videos he did on Channel Fireball, running kind of a blue-black Tezzeret deck that has the sort of Meatthopter Foundry combo in it.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
It did look like a lot of fun. That looks like a deck that I would enjoy very, very much.
Yeah, that does sound a lot of fun. Yeah, I saw one list. I think it was on Reddit somewhere, talking about, you know, Tezzeret, the, was it Tezzeret Agent of Bolas? Or
yeah, that's the one. The yeah. one that can either basically impulses for artifacts or turns one of your artifacts into a 5/5, which is just devastating.
God, that's insane.
And when you're making, you know, when you're making basically as many Thopters as you have mana every turn, then that just becomes just nuts.
And you're pretty much done.
Yep.
Now, I don't think I have, no, I don't have any Tezzeret Agent of Bolas. I have the other one.
Tezzeret the Seeker?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that is seen a little bit more play commander-wise and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've always loved, I mean, I always loved Tezzeret Agent of Bolas. Like, I played the crap out of, when he was standard legal, we had the Tezzerator combo, which was a lot of fun to play, and he was awesome in that deck. So I've always loved him, but.
Yeah, I wasn't around in standard when he was legal.
He didn't see, I mean, because that was back on the, I guess it was still in the middle of kind of the Cawblade days, so it was.
Yeah, that was Alara, right?
No, that was, he came out in Mirrodin.
Mirrodin Besieged, that's right.
So it was in the Scars of Mirrodin block, so we still had Cawblade floating around.
Yeah, that's right.
Is the deck that, you know, the kind of more top-tier deck he was played in was a little bit too slow to kind of hang with Cawblade and all those powerful decks, so it didn't see a ton of play, but it was just, it was a ton of fun, and he's a super fun planeswalker and super powerful, so it was just a lot of fun to play.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, that's what, I wish I got it. I wish I got back into Magic sometimes earlier than I did, taking so many breaks. It's like I missed out on so many fun, broken times.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'd call the Cawblade days all that fun. Certainly broken, but I don't know about fun. I mean, just as the guy who couldn't afford Cawblade, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I know what you mean. But to me, it's, you know, because I read about the bans and how broken it was. I just would have loved to have gone to a store and just hear people cry about, you know, it being broken. It's one of my little guilty pleasures of hearing people cry about broken stuff.
Well, I mean, and the funny thing was is that, you know, I had just started playing in Shards of Alara. So I had started playing, I'd gotten my feet wet, and then Cawblade became a thing right after that when, you know, World Wake came out. And it was, you know, it was kind of funny to watch the progression of it, because at first everybody was just playing the stock list. And then as it got older and everybody was playing Cawblade, I think 90% of my shop's meta at that point was Cawblade. People just, I mean, Cawblade became so inbred, you know, people were just building Cawblade decks that beat Cawblade, that beat Cawblade. And it went down this horrible chain. So, I mean, if you were the lucky guy who could find a way to beat Cawblade, which there weren't too many ways, then, you know, you were almost guaranteed to take down the store that night, because everybody was just playing Cawblade decks that beat Cawblade decks. It was gross.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's the thing with local metas that, you know, that's one of the things I like about local metas, but I also hate.
Oh, yeah.
Is you have that one guy that plays that one non-meta deck, you know, that, you know, your what quote-unquote tier 1, tier 2 deck just can't seem to beat.
Oh, yeah.
But if you take that, you know, non-meta deck to a tournament, it'd get wrecked.
Oh, but absolutely.
It's just, oh, God, I had this one guy at my shop. All he would play is just mono green. It's like, that's it. And the whole thing was he would just play ramp and just, you know, play big stupid creatures. And he would just get so mad if he lost.
Oof. That's always painful. Especially, like, you know, I always felt bad because, you know, I was not, you know, I was invested. I loved Magic, but I didn't have the card pools that these guys had.
Yeah.
And so, like, I, you know, I would come show up to FNM, and all these guys had their like fully foiled out, ridiculously expensive Cobblade decks, and I'm sitting here with this like beat to hell Kuldotha Rebirth Goblins deck. And like, and I would just take games off these guys because I was a little bit faster than they can get. I just tried to go under them, and they would just get so mad. And when I say this deck was beat to hell, I mean some of these cards, if I went to a tournament, I would have gotten kicked out in a heartbeat just because some of these cards were just beat to hell. But it was a lot of fun. It's fun to put the guys in their place who just want to play the top meta decks all the time. Sometimes. Unless you're that guy, then it's not so fun.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I know what you mean. So I guess tonight we're going to be talking about Khons and Fate Reforge going bye-bye.
Oh, goodbye.
There's definitely going to be some cards I miss. There's definitely going to be some cards I won't miss. Fetch lands are going to be one type of card I won't really miss. Not that they aren't bad, it's just the amount of time shuffling spent was just got a little, especially when Zendikar came out, it just got a little ridiculous how often you would shuffle.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think that's kind of the way I feel about it too. I mean, I'll miss fetch lands just because I really enjoyed getting to play with them. Because, you know, I don't play a ton of Eternal formats. I mean, I'll play Modern and I'll play Legacy from time to time. But it was fun just kind of experimenting around with these cards and feeling as powerful as you could be. But, yeah, the shuffling got ridiculous. The once we got, like, into the 4- and 5-color decks, it just felt ridiculous. So I'll miss them, but I won't miss them at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. So if you had to pick, what was your favorite card out of just Khons, not including Fate?
Out of just Khons. I think back. Honestly, I'm torn here. There are two cards that I really, really enjoyed. One because it was really good. And one because it really wasn't very good, but I tried so hard to make it good that I just felt completely invested. And probably the two are Mantis Rider and Butcher of the Horde.
Butcher of the Horde, yeah.
Yeah, and Mantis Rider obviously being the good card, the actual good card, and Butcher of the Horde being the one that just called to me and called to me and called to me and made me want to play it so bad. And it wasn't that it was a bad card. I just, it never quite broke through that glass ceiling, you know?
Yeah, and for people who don't remember what Butcher the Horde does, let me pull him up. He is Mardu, right?
He is, yeah. Black, white, red.
Yeah, that's right. And he's a 5/4. He's a flying demon. If you sacrifice another creature, Butcher the Horde gains your choice of Vigilance, Lifelink, or Haste until end of turn. This guy is a definite bomb and limited.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, unquestionably.
I hated going up against him in limited if someone drew him. Just like, well, shit, if I don't find out a way to kill him, I'm done.
Yeah, and I mean, he was big, he could get all kinds of cool abilities, and the format in Khons, especially when it was trip Khons, you know, it was all about the morphs. Like, morphs were just the thing in limited. So, you know, you could draft even, well, I found myself many times, especially if I had something big like a Butcher of the Horde, I would just be drafting off-color morphs because it's like, I'm just going to make this dorky dude that I'm not even going to try to flip him. He's just going to be fodder to my Butcher of the Horde, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So he was an absolute bomb, and I tried so hard to make him work in standard, and I had, you know, mild success with him, and I think some people had a little bit better success with him than I had, but it seemed like all the pieces were there, but just for some reason it wouldn't come together, like, you know, playing a bunch of token makers to give him food for days. I really felt like there was a deck there, but it just never quite broke through.
Did it feel too slow when you tried to make the deck, or what do you think was wrong?
It wasn't that it was too slow. I just felt like, you know, in those colors, especially in Khons, Mardu probably wasn't, I mean, it obviously wasn't the strongest clan. You know, we all know what the strongest clan was at that time. And
yeah.
And we'll just put this name out there because I'm sure we're going to be saying this name a lot tonight. Seedrino, you know, was just as big and scary and awesome as Butcher of the Horde was, it still couldn't really race a Seedrino. Because they, you know, they would trade, which was fine, but that 6-point life swing of, I play my Butcher of the Horde, give it haste attack. All right, cool. I untap. I play Seedrino. You lose 3. I gain 3. And now you have the choice to attack and fear that I'm going to play another Seedrino, or we can trade and I'm still going to play another Seedrino. And the Abzan deck was just so consistent.
Yeah, it was.
All the best removal. And I think that was really Mardu's problem, was Abzan had the best removal. And if they started picking off your dudes, I mean, that was it. They didn't have to worry about your tokens, because once they get to turn 4, Seedrinos are going to slaughter your tokens all day long. And it was just, save my Abzan charms for your Butcher, and you got nothing after that.
Yeah, because when Mardu, or when Cons first came out, I'm trying to think of some of the removals. So Red had Stoked the Flames, but I feel like that'd be, I feel like that's probably not a good card to play in Mardu.
I mean, it was okay.
It was good.
Yeah,
but
it was a fantastic card, but, you know, you really wanted to be going wide to play Stoke.
Yeah, and then White had, God, what did White have at the time? No, Valorous Stance was Fate.
Valorous Stance was Fate. White? I'm not remembering what just White had. I know that, you know, obviously there was Obzon Charm in White, but, and I think Obzon Charm was kind of the definition of the most solid removal. But I can't remember exactly what just White had. I don't think it had much.
Yeah, and then Black had Hero's Downfall, Thought Seize. It had what, Drown in Sorrow.
I mean, the reason you played the deck was for Black. I mean, Black was probably the strongest color there as far as you could get for removal.
Yeah.
And that was probably the reason why the deck struggled a bit. And Mardu still had Crackling Doom, but Crackling Doom wasn't nearly the animal that it was later on in the format at the time. So, you know, and you know, we saw how efficient Crackling Doom was later, but nobody was really on it at first. Having so much black removal, especially black removal that costs double black, like Hero's Downfall, made it difficult for you to play like Hordling Outburst and the stuff you wanted to ramp to get your Butcher of the Horde fed. And it seemed like all the pieces were there. They just didn't play together as cleanly as Obzon did.
Yeah, because when you talk about black, like how black had a lot of the good removal, why play, you know, a color, especially Mardu, when especially the red isn't there that good or that well, when you could just be playing Abzan?
Exactly.
You know, because with Abzan, you know, you had Abzan Charm. What was some other green stuff at the time?
Well, I mean, let's see. Abzan Charm, Seedrino. Green was, this was when Cons came out. I mean, Theros was still a thing. So you had some
Fleece Mane Lion was a creature.
Fleece Mane Lion was a big one.
Anafenza the Foremost was you definitely wanted that card, definitely. But I can't think of like any other, I guess, support spells that green had.
Green was kind of a back seat in the deck, honestly. It felt like the early Obzon decks were more about the white and black than they were the green. But, you know, and it was just about efficiency more than anything else. I mean, that deck was just the king of efficiency, just mid-range efficiency all day long.
Yeah, I have to kind of agree there. When it comes to my favorite cards and cons, let's see, Manus Rider is one of them. I'm kind of happy you said that. And probably the other one, and I tried to make this deck work, like it went through a lot of iterations. I tried to make Surok Dragonclaw.
Surok.
And oh my, I fell in love with that card as soon as, you know, saying creature spells can't be countered.
Yeah, so,
and all that.
Well,
it was just
to read them off real quick.
Sure.
Surok Dragonclaw, two generic mana, green, blue, red, for a 6/6 creature with flash. He can't be countered. And then creature spells you control can't be countered, and all other creatures you control are have trample. So just nasty.
And I wanted Teemer to be a thing so bad, but it just wasn't.
It wasn't.
Teemer.
Yeah.
It was. They had really good, like, Savage Knuckleblade. Oh, I loved that card.
Big Nux was amazing. I wanted that guy to be amazing.
I remember one draft I did, I managed to pull two of them. A foil and a regular, and I freaking dominated that draft night.
That's just disgusting.
Yeah, it was just ridiculous. Like, one of the first Teemer decks I tried to do was a Teemer Morph deck with, let me see. I had a playset of Trail of Mystery, which is whenever a face-down creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may search your library for a basic land card, put it into your hand, shuffle your library. And when it's the permanent is turned face up, if it's a creature, you get +2/+2 until end of turn. So I had that in there as a 4-of. I had Surok Dragonclaw as a 2-of, Savage Knuckleblade, Seder Wayfinder to help me find lands, Sagu Mahler as one of my morphs, and then Rattleclaw as another one of my morphs to help me play stuff. And Sagu Mahler, that was another one that could have been so good too, but he's just too slow.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm very shocked that Sagu Mahler didn't see more play. I know that I played one copy in my Sultai control deck that I was running towards the end of, well, when Cons came out and towards the end of Theros, just kind of a splash of green into that blue-black control shell. And I had one in the main and one in the board because he was just so effective against the mirror. And I really thought that card was going to take off a little bit further than it did. But yeah, all the Teemer cards, I really thought they were going to be a whole lot better than they were.
Yeah, and they just never got the love they needed when Dragons and Fate came out. There was just no good support for it.
Mm-mm, no.
And then when Origins came out, by then it was all about Abzan and, you know, Thopters and all that when Origins came out.
Yeah,
so.
And the funny thing was, I think the one of the biggest problems that Teemer had was when you share a color with easily the top deck in the format, you start running into that same problem that Mardu had. It's like, well, if you're going to play green, and why aren't you just playing Abzan? You know, like, it just...
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, that's just the problem. I feel like if more people had spent more time maybe building with Teemer as opposed to building with Abzan, we would have had a really sweet Teemer deck that would have been close to Tier 1. But as what happens, you know, people found the quote-unquote best deck, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah, it's sad what could have been.
True.
Sometimes. So when... Talking about Khan's Limited, you being a pretty good Limited player, what was your favorite Khan's card that you would draft? It could be common, uncommon, rare.
Well,
you know, I'd figure common and uncommon would be a little bit easier since.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, this comes in twos, or it actually just comes as a full cycle. For me and for a lot of Limited players that I trust and a lot of the Limited pros that I've spoken to and know about this, they would just say it wouldn't be just one card. It would be the whole cycle of morphs. Morphs just made draft an incredibly exciting experience.
I have to agree with that.
I mean, there were some cards that were just absolute bombs. I mean, obviously when Fate came into it, we got a much more, more bomby Limited format. But you know, when Cons was out, it was all about the morphs. I mean, morphs were high picks, over a lot of, even some of the more powerful rares. You would just rather take a morph sometimes because it was a creature you could always play on turn three, no matter what your mana looked like. If you were able to flip some of these morphs later on, like I remember specifically Avalanche Tusker, which was one of the Teemer morphs, Ponyback Brigade, the Mardu one that made a bunch of goblins when it flipped over.
Oh, yeah.
you know, they were so sweet. And I wasn't playing Magic back when morphs were originally in the format, so this was a new experience for me, and it just felt good. You know, I never played a game of Triple Cons Limited where I felt mana screwed, because I always at least had something to do with my mana. I could play a morph. If I didn't have enough to flip it, I could play another morph. And going along that same line, I think my favorite rare in the format was Trail of Mystery, the one that you mentioned earlier. Because you could just, if you pick that up, pick one. I mean, that was a pack one, pick one every single time, because you could just pick that guy up, and then you just drafted every morph you could get your hands on, and it didn't matter what your opponent did. I mean, you were almost guaranteed to win the draft at that point.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I would definitely say my favorite card would just be all the morphs. Just give me all the morphs. I didn't even care if they were bad ones. I just wanted all the morphs for days. I mean, obviously, if you could pick up one of the three-color rares, those were just insta-bombs every single time, like the Mantis Riders, the Siege Rhinos. Those are always excellent. I think the only card that I wasn't ever really excited to see that was good, it was a good card, was actually Sarkhan. It was a great...
The Planeswalker?
Yeah, the original one.
Okay.
Just because the double red was a little bit prohibitive. He was good, but the format was a little... I don't know if it was too fast or too slow, but it always seemed like when I drafted Sarkhan, it's like, okay, cool, this is a good powerful finisher, but he would just die. It seemed like he just died immediately. It's like, well, if that morph is anything small, oh no, it's something big. Okay, well, that's dead. You know, Sarkhan was cool, and obviously a very good card, but I was never super excited. Like, I was never jumping up and down for joy. Like, I got a Sarkhan. That's it. It's over. The rest of you can go home, you know?
Yeah, definitely. No, I have to... The one thing I did like about Khan's draft was... Now, like I've said before, I'm not, you know, a huge limited player. Or, you know, limited's one of my favorite formats, but I'm not very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have won a few drafts here and there. But it's the one thing I really liked so about Khan's was, so we just came from Theros and M15 draft, which when looking at especially the colors, it was very easy to figure out your mana base.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but then you go to Khan's and you're playing sometimes 3-4 colors. Holy crap, how much mana do I need?
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, what colors do I exactly need? That's where it got a little tough for me, especially the first few times, because... You know, you're not exactly sure, especially what colors you need to go with, because you'd pick, you know, a Mardu card one turn, then you saw this really good Sultai card, like, oh man, what do I pick?
Exactly. And it kind of amped up the fun a little bit there. And I mean, honestly, I think the correct answer in that situation is you take all of them and you just play all the colors and just have fun.
Yeah, that is the best answer. But if I had to pick my favorite Khan's card that I remember playing so many times and loving it every time I flipped it up was Ponyback Brigade.
Yeah.
Anytime I'd see one, I'm like, oh, it's mine.
Yeah, that guy was sweet. Absolute sweetness.
Yeah, I would just build... I would always pick that. If I didn't come across, like, a bomb rare or anything like that, I would just always look through the deck like, is Ponyback in here? Oh, he's not in here. Damn it.
Well, I guess I'll take this red card and hope that I get a Ponyback Brigade in my next pack.
Yeah. No, but I'm trying to think of some really good drafts that I had. God, I can't remember. I mean, anytime I pulled a Savage Knuckleblade, it's like I knew I was going to have a good night.
Yeah.
Because... That card's just so good and limited.
Big nuts.
Trying to think of any other card like I would always be excited to see. Of course, anytime, I'd always have to wonder about the person next to me if I was past like a Monastery Swiss Spear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that guy not know what he's doing, or did he just get a really good rare that he couldn't pass up?
Yeah, and that was the funny thing. I mean, Monastery Swiss Spear, you know, normally, you know, 1-2s for one are not all that exciting, but prowess just became such a really fun mechanic and surprisingly good. You know, in limited, it was probably less good than it could have been. But prowess was still just an incredible mechanic, and Monastery Swiss Spear, obviously, we're going to be feeling the reverberations of that card for a long time.
Oh yeah, I see it probably almost every Monday.
I go to
Modern. Yeah, it's because someone's always playing a burn deck. I mean, but it's like the perfect one drop to play too.
It is. I mean, and for those who don't know, which shame on you. Monastery Swiss Spear is a single red for a 1-2 haste with prowess, which is, of course, when you cast a non-creature spell, this creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. I mean, it's so efficient, and it's shockingly hard to kill. If you just have one instant or sorcery in your hand, you could just blow your opponent out in combat. I mean,
it was
a shockingly hard to kill card, and it's so unassuming when you first look at it, but it was beautiful. I love that card.
Yeah, it's definitely become one of the more, I guess it's become pretty much a staple. It's become like the poster child for prowess cards.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you couldn't, honestly, I think that's kind of why, you know, towards the end here of this standard season, blue-red prowess kind of became a deck, and while it's not losing too much, it's losing Swift Spear, and because of that, the whole deck just crumbles to pieces.
Yeah, because I haven't really seen a good one red drop. Isn't there one red, like 2/1, it's a vampire, though, or something?
Single red?
Yeah, in Shadows, I thought there was one.
Let's see. I don't remember. I'm sure there is.
Yeah, I'm looking up the spoiler because I thought there was one, or maybe I'm thinking of one colorless, one red. Oh, here we go. I'm thinking of Falkenroth Gorger.
Oh, is he the one that gives all your other vampires
madness?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's what it, I thought he had haste too. Nope.
Nope. I mean, a 2-1 for one is not, like, unplayable, but without haste, it's definitely not near on the level of Monastery of Swiss Spear or any of those other cards from the Red Burn decks.
And it's just not as exciting either.
No, I mean, yeah, it's just not nearly as exciting.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, so can you think of your most hated cons card in limited? Because that one's hard for me. I'm trying to think of that one, but I just can't. Because, I mean, there's so many, but it's just I can't remember that one card that I always hated seeing. You know, that one common or that one uncommon. It's.
I think, honestly, for me, I think it was probably Avalanche Tusker.
I forgot about him.
Yeah, Avalanche Tusker was 2 generic mana, green, blue, red for a 6/4 Elephant Warrior that whenever he attacks, target creature defending player controls blocks it this combat if able. And I just remember, like, it's not like a super powerful card or anything like that, but yeah. I do remember, like, every time my opponent had that kind of mana open, just fearing Avalanche Tusker coming down next turn for some reason. And when it did hit the table, I was like, oh man, this just means that my big dude is going to have to go up against his dude, and they'll trade fine, but I just lost my biggest dude, and this is terrible.
Oh man. Yeah, I can't remember if I have to go up against one. I know I've drafted him a couple times, but...
Yeah, Avalanche Tusker was up there. Honestly, I think Sagu Mauler was up there for me too. Just because of the sneak, you know, just because of that sneak attack, it was probably one of the bigger morphs in the format, and it was terrifying. If my opponent left up 3 green-blue, I was like, well, that could be nothing, or it could be Sagu Mauler, and I might be dead. So, I mean,
Yeah.
There was just, I think that's why I love this format so much. The triple cons, not con's fate. We'll get to that in a minute, I'm sure. But triple cons, there was just so much. I felt like the whole time I felt like I was always, you know, this could be my last turn. If that morph is something, is what I'm afraid it is, then I'm dead. If it's nothing, then I probably win this game. It's just everything felt close. Everything felt exciting. There was just a lot to love in this set.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that made it more exciting was just morph, as you were saying before. It's it just made it more like you don't know what's going to show up.
Exactly.
Because once you play a format, like I played a lot of M15 draft, and after just like any format, you know, you start to know what the archetypes are. After a while with cons, I mean, yeah, you start to know what archetypes there were, but especially when you're doing more of a casual draft, you have no idea what people are going to be playing or building.
Oh, yeah, no, especially in triple cons. I mean, all bets were off in triple cons. I mean, it was – I remember watching some streamers that I hold in very high respect, like Kenji, Numat the Nummy, or Marshall Sutcliffe. And I'm watching these guys, and I know that they're usually very, you know, very stoic, very conservative drafters and very good drafters. And I'm getting on their streams, and I'm watching them draft these, like, crazy five-color morph decks. And I'm like, this is insane. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that just made the format all the more fun to me. Once Fate came in, it tapered off quite a bit, but Triple Cons was just, it was the Wild West, man. It was a gunslinger's paradise in Triple Cons.
You know, when I think about it now, my store was doing the Fate Reforged draft wrong. They were doing two Fates in one Cons.
Ooh.
So, when I'm, because what I like to do is I like to record all booster drafts I do, and I put it up on Tapped Out.
Mm-hmm.
And just write a little blurb like, this is how I did. I don't do that when I draft online or anything, because then I'd have, you know, way too many drafts.
Oh, yeah, the infinite number.
Yeah, but so I'm looking at some of the drafts that I did when just Fate was out, and I have a lot of two-colored decks at that point. Some three-colored with a splash of, you know, a third color.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that made it very interesting because there was a lot more two-color decks that we did, but I'm sure you probably drafted the correct way that should have been done.
Yeah, when Fate was first released, we did a couple just-for-fun drafts that were triple Fate, just because we all wanted to get our hands on as many of the cards as possible, and that was insane.
All I have to say is ew.
Yeah, no, it was insanely stupid, but... But after that, we switched over to the Cons Fate. Or, yeah, it was Cons Fate. Fate was the last pack to be drafted. And
yeah. Well,
I complain about it, and I'll probably complain about it again tonight, but it really wasn't that bad. It was still fun. I still enjoyed that format a lot. But the strategy was completely different. And when you come out of a format like Triple Cons, where you really don't have to have a solid plan going in, and you can kind of just take what's fed to you. To actually have to think in my cons packs, all right, I actually can't just draft whatever the hell I want. I've actually got to think about what's going to be my big bomb that I open in Fate, and I have to draft accordingly to that.
Yeah, that was one thing I noticed with Fate, if I remember correctly, that the rares were very bombier.
Oh, they were.
I guess if that's a word.
They were insane. Yeah. And yeah. There's a term that I've heard to describe it, which is, well, to describe limited formats in general, is a lot of people kind of put it on this scale of, is it a popper format or a prince format? Popper being, you know, where the commons and uncommons are, you know, they might not be on par with the rares, but there's a lot of times you'll open a pack and see a powerful common or uncommon and a, you know, kind of mediocre rare, and you're snatching up. There were a lot of first pick worthy commons and uncommons. And then a prince format is where the commons and uncommons are all fine and good as filler, but the rares are where it's at, and every rare is bomby, and every rare is disgustingly good. And Fate kind of hit that. Fate was a very Prince format.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that, because I can just remember a lot of times just first picking, you know, rares, because it's just, this is too good to pass
up. Oh, absolutely. And it made the, you know, I think that's why I kind of liked, once Dragons came out later on, doing it Fate, Dragons, Dragons. Because having to, you know, when you do cons Fate, it was like, all right, I've got all these really sweet three color awesomeness morphs and stuff, and then you open your Fate pack and you know, I haven't really been drafting white, but suddenly I'm staring at a Citadel Siege, and it's like, well, I'm not passing this card, because if I pass this card, I lose. I'll just lose immediately. I mean, this card is just too good. So then you have to, you know, kind of cobble together something in Fate so that you can play Citadel Siege. And it just felt, it was kind of a feel bad, you know, it was just kind of a feel bad thing.
God, you want to talk about a card I did not want to see in my opponent?
Absolutely.
Play, yeah, Citadel Siege. It's just sort of, as soon as you see that, you're just like, well, I've got maybe a turn or two left.
Yep.
Until I'm dead.
Yep. That card was just busted. I mean, sieges were okay, but if you open Citadel Siege, man, you could not go wrong opening that card.
I know. I just wish it saw some good constructed play too. God, it always like irks me a little bit. It could be so good in limited, and then absolute, not that it was absolute trash in constructed. It just never saw play.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, that's just kind of the way it works. Always, there's always going to be cards that are pushed much harder for constructed than limited, and then a lot of cards that are going to be pushed a lot harder for limited than constructed. And I think, you know, Wizards does that so that we have two healthy formats.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, you can have a card that's the absolute nuts in constructed, but it'll just be garbage in limited. And then cards like Citadel Siege that are just the absolute nuts. You're never passing this card. You're picking it pack one, pick one every single time. But then they can't seem to make that transition over.
Yeah, and I feel like what you were saying, they do a good job with making booster packs for limited.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still like buying a box every once in a while, just opening it all up. But I feel, you know, because it always feels kind of bad that if you just open up a booster by itself and you get like all these shitty cards you're never going to play in constructed. But at least when you go to draft and you see those quote unquote shitty cards, it's, oh my God, they're actually turning out to be really good.
Yeah. I mean, like,
and it makes it fun.
Absolutely. I mean, if I bought a box and the entire box, every pack in it I opened was a Citadel Siege, I would fall on the floor and cry. But
yeah.
But if I went to a draft and every pack I opened was a Citadel Siege, I'd fall on the floor and cry, but for better reasons, because I know I'm just never losing. You know, so it's just,
yeah,
it's just one of those things. It helps make a balanced, fun. It makes a more balanced, fun way to play multiple formats. But
it is
feel bad sometimes.
Yeah. So veering off a little bit on draft, it's have you ever drafted like any of the way older sets, like maybe Alpha, Beta,
not
and all
that far back? I mean, I've done probably the farthest back I've done.
And this could just be online too. I don't mean like actually drafting.
Oh no. I don't think that opportunity would ever be afforded to me, and I don't think I would ever even be able to bring myself to participate in a paper Alpha or Beta draft. I think the oldest draft I've done is a Mercadian Mass draft. Which was fun.
I don't think I've done that one
that.
Yet.
And I really enjoy watching old formats being drafted. I don't get to do it that often. But when they do the flashback drafts on Magic Online, I try to do it. Just because, you know, that was, a lot of them are before my time, and a lot of them are considered to be very good draft formats. They just had, pretty recently, they did the flashback drafts for Original Ravnica. And I was not playing during that time, but Original Ravnica is still heralded as one of the best limited formats of all time. And I got to go and try that and experiment with that, and it just felt awesome. You know?
You know, I keep meaning to do some of those, but I every time I see, like, I just saw Ravnica, like you said, it's like, ooh, I guess I'll do that, and then I forget.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, you know, it's not like it's going to progress you very far to just flashback drafts, but they're kind of a fun novelty thing. Like, it's like, oh, well, I've got, you know, X amount of tickets just kind of sitting around doing nothing. I've got a couple hours to kill here. Oh, I've never drafted Weatherlight before. Why don't we try that? You know, so... Yeah. It's kind of cool, and I'm glad that they do that, because obviously a lot of these formats I'll never be able to draft in paper, and some of them I would not want to, because I would have to be wearing surgical gloves, you know.
Oh yeah, no. One time my friends and I, we got online and did just an alpha draft. Oof. Just on I think drafts.in.
Yeah,
and let me tell you, that was. It was fucking hard. I don't even remember what I drafted or what colors. I think I ended up drafting like blue, green, and white or something. Or
yeesh.
And you can definitely tell back then they were not meant to be drafted at
no,
all.
No, absolutely not. I don't think was anything that Wizards ever had in mind back then.
Yeah, it was. I don't even remember what creatures I got, or no one got any power nine. Mm-hmm. Or anything, or dual lands, or anything like that. It was all absolute shit. But I think the funniest thing that happened that night was I was playing got this quote unquote big flyer. I think it was like a 3/3 or something, which, you know, for back then that's pretty big.
Oh yeah.
And no, he wasn't a flyer. No, it was a Hill Giant. I think was Hill Giant.
I believe Hill Giant was originally Alpha. I can or Beta, one of them.
It was a 3/3 something. I don't remember what it was.
Well, Hill Giant was originally 10th edition, so it can't be that, but...
Okay, well, it was...
No, Alpha, Beta. Yeah, Hill Giant was around then.
Okay, so maybe it was that, and I can just remember I was beating my friend down, and then and he's playing blue, because he loves playing control. He's playing blue, green, red, or something like that, and all of a sudden, he just decided to cast Flight on my creature, giving it flying. I'm like, okay, what the fuck is he about to do? Like, why'd you just make my creature fly? And then he goes and casts, what was it? Hurricane, I think it was.
Oh, that's the deal X damage to all creatures with flying or something like that, or destroy all creatures with flying.
Yeah, it was either Hurricane or something else that kills creatures with flying. And I'm just like, you motherfucker. Like, what the hell?
And I mean, that's the awesome part about, especially Alpha and Beta. I mean, I would love to try to draft it. I'm sure it's just a horrendous experience from time to time. But yeah, I mean, some of these cards, you know, like Hill Giant, a 3/3 for 4, like that's pretty damn big. I mean, that's almost a bomb. It's just
yeah, because there's not much else. I mean, what, Shivan Dragon was in Alpha, right? Yeah, we didn't see any of those, and that's what, a 4/4,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it kind of made me wish I was back, you know, playing back then. Oh wait, no, Shivan Dragon's a 5/5. That's right.
Oh.
Dude, that's fucking huge back then. Holy shit!
I just remember when people talk, like, the thing that sticks out in my mind the most when people talk about Alpha and Beta is that, like, Sarah Angel was like just the shit. You know, just like that card was, it was impossible to beat Sarah Angel. And now you look at Sarah Angel and it's like, yeah, it's kind of cool. But back then, like, Sarah Angel was just.
Oh, Flying Vigilance 4/4.
Yeah, Flying Damn. Vigilance 4/4. Just straight up vanilla. Flying Vigilance 4/4. Doesn't do anything else exciting. But I always hear people say that card was just disgusting.
Well, yeah, when you think about the card pool back then, it was. Shit, doesn't even tap to attack. Mm-hmm.
Blocks Damn. And attacks. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. God, why was I a stupid kid? I think back when Magic came out, I think I was still into Pogs or something. Or...
I mean, I was in no way interested in stuff like this back then. So, I mean, I kick myself now because I could be sitting on a bunch of Black Lotuses at the moment. But
probably,
hindsight
is
2020, right?
I know. Just like if I still had some of my old Pokemon cards, because I played that when it first came out, and I had, you know, the foil Charizard, the foil Bulbasaur, whatever, the really expensive. If I had that now, I look up prices, I'm like, damn, that card's like $2,000 now. Jeez. Like, fuck, why did I get rid of it?
Well, cause, I mean, back then it was just like, oh, this is cool. It's got a monster on it, and we can, you know, we can throw these cards on the table, and I could put them in binders and make my friends look at them. You know, we had no idea that stuff like that would be worth a crap ton of money later in life. It's,
yeah, and I had no idea Magic would still even be around.
I don't think
that was just. Yeah, I was just thinking, oh, it's going to be around for a few years, and then boom, just fade off. Because I remember when I got back into it in college, I'm just like, holy shit, this is still around. People still play this. And then you read up about it, that how it gets more and more popular every year. It's just, it's insane. Like, I'm surprised it's still going on for this long and it's still as popular as ever.
The only reason I'm not surprised is just how well it's made. I mean, I've played a lot of games in my life, but Magic is the one that I keep coming back to say, you know, this is a game that was just made well. It's changed over time. It's never stayed stagnant. You know, they've always found a way to change it. They're constantly changing rules. They're constantly updating rules. And I think it just makes it feel like a new game. Like, every time a set comes out, it just feels like a new game all over again.
It really does.
That's just the beauty of it, I think.
Yeah, the one thing I really, that now that I've gotten older, and, you know, I still love playing video games and all that, and I feel like one thing that Magic does, especially Paper Magic, is it brings people together.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to play, because I'm sure you can remember this, playing Nintendo or Sega and having your friends over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, yeah, there are some times where, you know, you may have friends over if you still have a Wii U and play Smash or something, but that happens less and less because of online.
Exactly.
Play.
I mean, you don't have, you know, like, I remember, you know, and this was still when, you know, Xbox Live was a thing, but it wasn't like a huge thing back on the original Xbox. And yeah. I remember the thing is that, you know, if you wanted to play with a whole big group of people, you unplugged your Xbox, you packed it up in a backpack, you carried it over to your friend's house, you set up a bunch of TVs, and you had a giant LAN party, you know, you got together with
people.
Oh,
yeah. Hell yeah.
But, yeah, and Magic still does that. I mean, Modo is okay, and Modo provides us with another way to play Magic, but if you want to play Magic, you're playing Paper Magic, you're in a shop, you're interacting with other people. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and that's what I feel like, for me, what Paper does for me better is it brings back that feeling of, you know, going and playing friends, like playing GoldenEye for hours for something, or playing Mario Party or something like that, or, hell, Mario Kart.
Oh, gosh, yes.
The original one. My friends and I played a lot of the Mario Kart 64, but the original Mario Kart, oh, my God, we will play that for like hours, because one of our friends, no, that was only two players. Yeah, we would just play that for hours, just doing that one.
Oh, certainly. And it's still fun. I mean, that's the thing, like, it's still fun. It holds up, and that's the testament to a good game, is, you know, does it stand the test of time? And Magic's been around now for, gosh,
since 93, I think it was, or 94,
more than 20 years.
Yep.
I mean, that's if that doesn't say stand the test of time, I don't really know what does.
Yeah, and just like now that I have kids, you know, I'm teaching my kids how to play. Just before we started the podcast, I was playing Commander with my kids and my wife's uncle. You know, my uncle and I, we were, you know, piloting the Commander decks, and we were letting the kids try to, you know, make decisions and all that. Like, ooh, what's a good card? You know, of course, I didn't listen to my kid, because I'm like, no, you don't want to play that card. Because I would tell her, you know, because I was playing Nin the Pain Artist. Oh, cool. So every time I draw a card, and of course, in my Nin deck, I have like 50 counters, pretty much. So she's like, ooh, play Counterspell. I'm like, why? No, that's a terrible choice. There's nothing to counter.
Sweetie, there's nothing to counter.
So just like that, and, you know, I've told you about the dual decks that I built. It's fun, you know, teaching my kids how to play, and, you know, it's passing it down.
Absolutely.
And it just, you know, and that We totally veered off course, but yeah.
Well, that's what magic does, man. It opens up kinds of new avenues. And honestly, I feel like it's appropriate that we're talking about it this way because, you know, rotations, I feel like, are one of those things that keeps magic fresh and keeps it feel like a new game. And you know, we're sitting on the cusp of a new rotation on Friday. So it's just, again, we're going to probably be looking back in another year with you know, with more pleasure on the set that we've had previous on the previous sets, and just it's just a continuous, ongoing, living, breathing game. It's awesome.
Yeah, and it is awesome. And as much as people bitch about Standard and how much it can cost, I mean, yeah, it gets expensive in the long run compared to Legacy and Modern. But that's what I like about Standard so much, because it keeps it fresh. Yeah. Every 6 months it changes?
Every 6 months.
And while that may not seem like a lot of time, it doesn't seem like a lot of time, but I get bored. Like especially before, because when I started Standard back in Innistrad to Ravnica, I'd get bored after like a year.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the same decks over and over again.
And I mean, that was the hard thing about Standard, was that it would have been, I mean, those first few months just felt amazing. Like probably about the first 6 months, it always felt amazing to be playing Standard. And then once the format was solved, it was kind of fun to still play when the format was solved. But after a good couple months of that, it was just like, oh, well, we got Obzon versus this deck again. We got Obzon versus Esper Dragons. All right, well, that's we know how it's going to end up. You know, it's just like, eventually you can start calling the end of matches before they actually happen, just because you've seen these two decks duke it out so many times. And rotations definitely kick it back into high gear. So I'm glad about it, personally.
Oh, yeah, me too. So did you ever take the plunge and play Obzon in Standard?
I never did. And it isn't because I didn't think it was a good deck, because it was obviously a really, really good deck. I am just that guy who wants to still play a Tier 1 deck, but wants to play the Tier 1 deck that isn't the deck that everybody else is playing, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So, like, you know, I played a lot of Esper Dragons. I played a lot of Blue-Black Control. I played a lot of decks that Atarka Red. You know, I played a lot of decks that were still very good and could hold their own against Obzon, but were not Obzon. I did buy a playset of Siege Rhinos just because I was like, well, I can't be a Magic player and not have a playset of Siege Rhinos, I guess.
I know.
Saw them, you know, when they started making even their leap over to Modern for that short time. I guess they might still see some play in Modern. I don't know. I haven't looked, but you know, I wanted to go ahead and pick them up. But no, I never took the plunge. I resisted as hard as I could, and I never wound up playing any version of Obzon, whether it be the mid range, the aggro, or the control. I never did it.
Oh man, so I took the plunge. It wasn't until Origins came out, though. I can say I held off for that long.
Impressive, actually.
Because I can remember when it first started getting popular, my whole shop, it felt like, was playing Obzon. It was, oh great, you know, I'm taking, you know, Jeskai out for a run, and oh look, I'm going up against Siege Rhino again. Oh look, it's Siege Rhino again. For like four rounds of Obzon, it just becomes not fun after a while. And when half your shop is playing Obzon, it becomes definitely not fun after a while.
Absolutely. And you know, and I call it, honestly, I call it the Jund effect. Because, like, you know, a deck like Obzon, or going back further, like Jund, is a deck that a lot of people will gravitate towards because it is so consistent. It is so powerful. It doesn't really have a bad matchup. There are matchups that are maybe it's a little bit weaker too, but you never really feel like you have a bad matchup. And while that is annoying for the guy like me who doesn't want to play the super consistent deck every time, it is still cool to see that a deck like that can exist. So, you know, while me and Abzan never got together, I don't have any hard feelings towards Abzan.
Yeah, I guess I have a little bit different feeling because I fucking hated it. Even when I played it, I'm just like, fuck you, Seadrino God.
Okay, let's be clear. All right, let's be clear. I said that I didn't have any hard feelings towards Abzan.
True.
No, fuck that bastard. I hate that guy.
I think one of my most hated plays, and regardless of what deck I was playing, whether I was doing control or whatever, they do turn 4 Siege Rhino, and then turn 5 Wingmate Rock.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you know you were fucked if, you know, you couldn't, if you couldn't stop Wingmate Rock or stop the Siege Rhino, and you're just like, well, it's a good game.
It was that curve, man. That curve was so devastating.
God,
you know, like even back when we didn't, when they didn't have Air of, when they didn't have Warden of the First Tree, when they would just go, you know, back in the early days of Abzan, when they would just go like turn 2 Fleecemane Lion into turn 3 Onofenza, turn 4 Siege Rhino, turn 5 Wingmate Rockets. How are you beating that?
What are you supposed to do? Yeah. I mean, like, you're just sort of like, well, okay.
Yeah, it's like, I guess you win.
I'll proceed to bend over. You know. Oh, man, you might remember this since you did a lot of limited. What was, God, I think it was a morph. And I can't remember if it came out in Dragons or Fate. It was a morph when it flipped up. You return target creature back to your hand.
Back to your hand, or just?
I think it was.
Let's see, because I know that there was.
God, I think it was that, or when you played it, or it had flash, and when you played it, you'd be able to return target creature back to your hand, or fuck, what was it?
It's not ringing any. I mean, I remember Ice Feather Aven, which I think when it.
It wasn't Ice Feather. I can't remember if it was a morph or not. It, or maybe it had flash.
Let's see. I'm just going to do a little gather search here. Return. No, it's not coming up. I don't know.
I'm going to see if I can try to find it. But no, I want to say it was a white card that did this. God, I feel like it was something cheap, too. It's going to drive me crazy if I can't figure it out, because I'm going to just be thinking about it the whole night.
Well, let's see. I'm just looking at all of the ones that... It was Ice Feather Aven was a morph that when it turned up, you may return a target creature to its owner's hand. Force Away was a bounce one with Ferocious. Pearl Lake Ancient was the one that you could bounce 3 lands to your hand and then bounce it to its hand.
No, it wasn't that. Shit.
It doesn't look like it's in cons.
Yeah, I think it's in Fate or Dragons. Let's see, because I'm trying to do a search. Well, anyways, this one card, this just goes to show how much I fucking hate Abzan. If I remember the card, I think it was white, and you would flash it in to return target creature, and you can probably guess where I'm going with this, where they would return Siege Rhino to their hand just to play it again. And you're just like, motherfucker, I hate you. Because they would do that at the end of your turn, flash it in to return it. You're just like, oh, here, Jeskai Barricade. That's what it was. I remember this guy built a deck based around Jeskai Barricade and Siege Rhino and all these enter the battlefield
effects.
That
guy needs to go to hell. That's terrible. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because he's actually my friend and all that. But just like when he built this deck, he would flash it in, you know, return Siege Rhino, at, you know, at the end of my turn, and then just play Siege Rhino again, just like, motherfucker. And he would just keep doing that just to, you know, Lightning Helix you. Just like, holy
fuck.
Yeah,
exactly, right? And honestly, I feel like that's, you know, I may hate Siege Rhino, I may hate saying its name and having had said its name for so long, but that was the beauty of that card, was just that it was just that good. Because, you know, a card like Jeskai Barrier couldn't have been good if there wasn't something as stupid powerful as Siege Rhino to bounce back to your hand and keep your...
I know. Yeah.
So it allowed for some super janky stuff, as well as just some straight up consistent powerful tournament play. But I will not be, I will not cry one single tear to see Siege Rhino go. That's for sure.
Oh, neither will I. But when I did take the plunge to play Abzan, I think I took it for 2 or 3 weeks straight, and I got top four every single time. I'm just like, I feel
yeah, dirty. The deck was just that good. I mean, it was just that good.
I feel like, and I'm not saying it didn't take skill to play.
Oh, it certainly did. It certainly took skill to play.
But it just felt very, okay, turn one, land, turn two, Fleece Main, turn three, Inoffensa. You know, that just that curve. It's just, you know, what else am I going to do? I'm just gonna win unless you can stop everything I'm
exactly
playing.
And honestly, I think that's where I honestly feel like the skill of an Abzan player came in their decision making more than anything else. Because your deck is so powerful that you can just autopilot and curve out and probably still win the game. But the intricacies of when to hold your Abzan charms, or when to use your Abzan charm to maybe draw two cards and lose two life, or put counters on your dude as opposed to exiling their best thing. And later on, when you had like Warden of the First Trees, like, when are we going to play a two drop or just go ahead and level my wardens? You know, there were a lot of really surprisingly complicated decisions to that deck. And then there were some draws that you would draw where it was just autopilot. I mean, and that was, that made it the deck so scary.
Oh yeah, definitely. God, like you said, I will not miss it.
No, I won't. I mean, I don't think, you know, as an overarching whole, I don't think that I will miss Cons and Fate and this standard season all that much. And it will be nice to get back to more simpler times of Magic.
I will not miss this four color stuff.
Yeah,
at
no,
all.
I won't miss it. I won't miss it. But there are some things that I will miss. I played some of my favorite decks that I've ever played during this time in Standard. So there are things that I'll miss. But I'll look back on it with some fond memories and some very angry table flipping memories. But yeah, it was fun. I think in the end, it was fun.
What were some of the decks that were your favorite to play?
Oh man. Well, this kind of goes back to when Origins rotated in. I loved the Thopters deck. That deck was so much fun.
Cause that was actually my first deck that I built for when Cons came out, the Ensol Artifact deck. And I tried to make it a control variant instead of aggro, and it did pretty well. I won I think maybe just one FNM, but it usually I would go either 2-2 or 3-1, you know, and I always loved the control variant, but it just never seemed like it could break through. Especially, I had to stop playing it, especially when Abzan got so popular. I'm just like, yeah, if I don't get a 5/5 by turn two, I'm just dead.
And I mean that, I think Origins was what pushed that deck over the edge. Just because we got Hangerback Walker, Thopter Engineer, you know, a lot of like really powerful
Chief of the Foundry.
Oh gosh, yeah. A lot of super
when that came out. Yeah, when that came out, I freaking obliterated people with that deck. I built the one that got second place at the Pro Tour and just destroyed people.
I will have one of my most memorable moments in Magic ever with that deck. And it was just because of the saltiness of my opponent. Because, I mean, everybody in, I was the one guy in my shop that was playing the Thopters deck. And I just, I remember very distinctly this one match where my opponent was on, I think he was on a Tarkared or, you know, it's just something very fast. And I'm like, well, this is going to be a race. I know this is going to be a race. He has the edge over me in speed. I've got the edge in late game power. So if I can just get to the mid game, we'll be good. And I remember in my opening hand having like a Hangerback Walker, a Darksteel Citadel, a Springleaf Drum, and two Shrapnel Blasts. And I'm like, okay, there's 10 damage right there. So I've just got to get him to 10. And I took my first draw step for the turn, Shrapnel Blast. And I'm like, are we doing this right now? And I remember just pecking at him. He had me up against the wall. And in one turn, I cast three Shrapnel Blasts. And he was I'm just so salty. He was so angry, stormed out of the shop, like just throwing stuff around the room. And I was like, they asked me, well, what did you do to him? I'm like, I cast three Shrapnel Blasts in one turn and nugged him for 15. And it was just like,
oh man,
it was so I will never forget that as long as I live.
Oh, that's the best, getting people mad like that. Oh man, it's like, yeah, I've gotten mad in Magic, but it's usually I get mad at myself because I'm just like, fuck, I could have won if I had done this and that, damn it. You know, it's more than anything, I get mad at myself.
I never remember a time where I've actually just gotten mad at my opponent. You know, I don't get mad at my opponent, but I do get mad at myself a lot when I play Magic.
Oh, you know what? I take that back. I did get somewhat mad at my opponent on last Friday. I guess you can call it mad. It's this kid. He's like 14, 15 mm-hmm. or whatever, and you know, he's been at the shop for a while, and you know, we know each other, we talk and all that. But I came Friday and I had just worked that 20 hours and I just wanted to have some fun, and he's one of those kids that can get rambunctious and really loud and all that, and I told him straight up in the beginning of the match, I'm just like, listen, I don't feel like dealing with your crap today. All right. Like I was just like dead set, and I'm like so exhausted, like I can't show any emotion. And I'm just like, I just don't feel like dealing with it. You know, let's just play some Magic. And I was playing my Eldrazi ramp. He was playing Rakdos Dragons, and he beats me pretty quickly game one. And I'm just looking, you know, I'm starting to shuffle up for game two, and I'm just like, you know what? You win. I don't want to play you. I don't like playing you. Just like straight up. And he's just like, he's almost taken aback. He's like, what? That really hurt. I was like, that hurts my feelings. I'm like, yeah.
I know. I don't care.
I know. I don't really care. And plus what didn't help was I was starving and I had just come back from picking up food, and the round just started as soon as I came back. Because we had two very slow players that are usually there. So I thought, I finished round two pretty early. I won pretty quickly. And so I think, all right, I have time to go get food and come back and eat, and then realize, shit, I got to wait to eat my food. I think that also didn't help.
Yeah, I'm sure not. Yeah, hangry is never good with Magic. That's for sure.
No. And plus, being so exhausted, I was just like, you know, I don't even fucking care. I'm just like, yeah, whatever, you win. Okay, cool.
Well, I'm going to eat. Leave me alone.
That's probably the one time that I got, but it wasn't really mad at the game. It was just more of like, I don't feel like dealing with your crap.
Exactly.
Please.
Exactly.
But as far as, when I get mad, quote unquote, it's more of at myself, where it's just, shit, I could have done this and I won, or I could have won two turns ago if I'd done this, and whatever.
I hear you.
But yeah, I'm trying to think. I've definitely gotten some people salty. I especially love when I was playing my Landfall deck at one point. This was probably when Zendikar first came out. The guy got me down to like 5 or something, and he was up to 27 life, and I managed to do like 27 damage to him the next turn. he wasn't really mad. He was just, I guess he was sort of saying something like, oh, watch, you know, he wasn't really saying, like, I have no chance of winning, but he's just like, if you manage to do 27 damage to me right now, you know, then I just fucking quit. Because it took me a little while to attack because I was trying to do the math in my head because of prowess and landfall and all that crap. So I'm like trying to think, like, okay, you know, I'll do all the math. He's like, wait, you're taking a while. What's going on? I'm like, hold on. I think I may have this.
That's never the thing ever. That's never the thing you want to hear your opponent say. When it's when you're sitting back, like leaning back in your chair, I got this game sewn up. And then you watch them start doing math and it's like, what could they possibly have?
It's the best. Yeah, it's. I usually try to tell my opponents, like, oh, can you kill me? Like, I mean, I'll tell them, like, straight up, like, if you can kill me, I don't have anything I can do. You know.
That's amazing.
But, yeah, so if I had to pick probably my favorite deck out of all cons that I played, Thopter deck would probably be really close. The other one would be this Jeskai mid-range deck I played, like, I think when Origins came out. And it was probably my favorite version of Jeskai. It had the creatures were four Goblin Rabble Masters, Hangerback Walker, Flip Jace, Mantis Rider, and Pia and Kieran.
Oh.
It was so freaking good.
That just sounds like a lot of fun to play.
Oh yeah. It's reminiscent of like what Dark Jeskai is now. You know, you're not going to be playing a lot of creatures, and it's a little bit slower, and you have a lot of stuff to be able to, you know, wipe the board with and all that. But, man, it would just wipe people's faces.
I mean, that was part of the power of Goblin Rabble Master. I mean, that's a card that I miss terribly.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that 8-whack Goblin deck for Modern, and I don't have, like, all the cards for it, and instead of... I forget which creature I replace it with, but I put in my playset of Goblin Rabble Master. I know it's not the greatest card, but I don't care. I want to play it. I don't care about taking it to tournaments. It's just going to be, I want to have goblins.
Yeah, and I mean, that's
and you're gonna
that's part of the beauty of Magic, isn't it? Yeah. You could just be like, I don't care if it's not the best. I just want to do it.
What do you think was your jankiest deck that you can think of you took?
Oh man, my jankiest deck. When Cons was out. My jankiest deck.
I've got two that were pretty janky that one of them did pretty decent when I took it for a couple weeks. The other one I just took as a complete joke. I think I told you about it. The wall deck.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was probably my jankiest.
The assault formation deck, right?
Yep. I think the other jankiest deck I took, and I was super excited to build this and play. It was a token deck when Cons first came out. So I had Elspeth, of course. And then I had Archetype of Courage, Elvish Mystic, Fleece Mainline, Hornet Nest, Soldier of the Pantheon, and Sylvan Caryatid as my creatures. What fucking con shit did I have in here? It seemed like no con stuff at all. Yeah, there was no cons cards in here. Okay, so this is more of a Theros deck than anything.
Yeah, wrong goodbye show there.
Yeah, I thought I had, well, because I built this during Cons, so I thought I had some Cons cards
in
here.
To be fair, I mean, Theros was still legal. I mean, it wasn't like Theros was gone when Cons was around, so, I mean, that is fair.
Oh, you know what? This was a budget deck, so I had Blossoming Sands in there. So, boom, there you go. It's Cons. Terrible card, but hey, it cost me $20.
Well, there you go then. You can't ask for much better than that.
Yeah. Even though Elspeth was pretty expensive, I think I pulled her in a prize pack or something. I know I didn't buy her outright.
Oh, I miss Elspeth.
But I know, God. If she was in the format right now, oh man, white would be white, probably like white blue or white black control would be so good right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Gross.
God, but. Oh my God, tokens would be freaking busted.
Beyond. I don't think I don't think that would be a thing that would be fun to play against at all.
Yeah, but she's dead though, right?
I think in the storyline, yeah, but you know, how long is that gonna last?
Yeah. Oh, I know. God. I don't even want to think about the Magic story, because now it's like we have like our fifth Jace Planeswalker now, and
freaking Jace.
God, it's like, now I really like Jace. He's probably added the Lorwyn 5. Him and Chandra are probably my favorite, but it's just they put him in everything. It's like, why? I mean, I get it. He's probably like the face of Magic, but it's like, come on.
I mean, he's definitely the poster boy of Magic the Gathering for sure.
But it's like, come on, just use someone else. I mean, you have plenty of other planeswalkers that don't get enough, you know, showtime.
All they have to do is print, you know, another planeswalker, a different planeswalker that is just as powerful as Jace the Mind Sculptor, and boom, you've got your new poster child right there.
Oh, but
that'll never happen.
No, and probably not. Not until, you know, they decide to kill off Jace, and then he comes back as, you know, a blue-black, you know, zombie or something.
Oh, man! Oh, man!
Boom. There you go, Wizards. Boom. It's a combination of Mind Sculptor and Liliana the Veil.
Oh, we're going to trademark that right now. So, Wizards, you can make checks payable to Magic with Zuby for that idea, for that incredible idea that we just came up with.
Yep. Boom. No, it's like when I read, I don't read all the Uncharted Realms or all the Magic stories, but I'll, you know, go on to Wiki and, you know, just sort of read up the synopsis of each set or whatever. You know, I gotta say it gets almost tiresome after a while. Like, I don't know the stories of every set, but it gets tiresome that each set there's always like this big bad guy, or there's always something evil going down. And all that. And I get that it's a magic, it's magical world, and there's always going to be bad guys, but can't they just come up with something different besides just, hey, there's a big bad guy and we got to stop him?
Yeah, I mean,
or
in a way, I feel like they probably could. But that is such a, you know, a tried and true fantasy trope that it's kind of hard to get away from. I feel like they could, and I feel like they've gotten a lot better with their storylines. It doesn't feel quite the same, especially with like the, since we're talking about cons, the cons Fate Dragon storyline I felt was interesting in the way that it wasn't like we're going to fight the big baddie, you know. It was more like, you know, the big baddies are coming and we need to find Ugin because he's the only one that knows how to stop the big baddies, you know. And so, I mean,
and I did like that, the whole time travel aspect. One of the, when you read like the flavor of the cards, like, you know, the little flavor text, that probably was one of my favorite sets that had really good flavor text.
I loved it. I'll admit my nerdom here is I love card flavor. I think I expressed how much card flavor really means to me when we were talking Shadows Over Innistrad a few weeks back. But the whole thing was just incredible, and you know, it's appropriate that we started talking about storylines because cons and Fate, like, this is something they never tried before, you know.
And they never done time travel like this before.
I mean, I think they've done a couple of things with time travel before, but not where it was like, you know, here's this plane and now we're all gonna time travel, and when we come back it's gonna be completely different, and we're coming back in the third set of this block, you know. It was so cool, and it made for such an interesting, like, I followed the storyline hardcore. Like, it was so cool to me to watch them evolve this this new idea, and I hope that they kind of took lessons from this storyline and apply it to sets to come, because they struck some pretty solid gold here.
Yeah, because what I liked with it was it wasn't so black and white. It wasn't so, oh, this is the bad guy, we got to stop it.
Exactly.
And and I also loved comparing cards from like cons to dragons and seeing, you know, okay, what's happened with Serac, or what's happened with, you know, Zergo, what's happened with Narset.
That was,
you know,
one of
in
the,
between the two different
that was
timelines.
Honestly one of the coolest things I think ever was just the whole, like, you know, we're going to see these guys again, but when you see them, they're going to be completely different. Or even just some of the card art. Like, I remember specifically when, you know, they printed Tassigar the Golden Fang in Fate Reforged, which was a card that I was absolutely in love with.
Oh, that's probably my favorite card in Fate.
It's up there. It's not quite my favorite card in Fate. I think my absolute favorite card in Fate had to be Monastery Mentor.
I forgot about that one.
But Tassigar was right up there. And I just remember squealing like a little girl when Dragonlord Silumgar got printed, and there was Tassigar as a necklace on Dragonlord Silumgar.
Yeah.
And I was just like, are you kidding me right now? This is a thing?
Yeah, that was badass.
Oh, it was awesome. I loved seeing all these little nuances with the art and the Fate promos that they did that were like the alternate art Fate promos, and it was cool. It just felt, the whole set was just a feel good, warm blanket of a set.
Yeah, they really try to go with like the Back to the Future esque type changes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like what you do in the past really does affect the present, so be careful.
Yeah, because it was definitely a nice change of pace, because before that was Theros, and Theros was all about, you know, what it was, they were first trying to stop Xenagos, I think, in this story, and then it ends up being what Heliod was the bad guy, the god of the sun, right?
Kind
Wasn't
of,
it
was more like they were really, I mean, the whole deal in the original bit, I thought, was that Erebos, the death god, was kind of like who you thought the bad guy would be. Xenagos kind of became the bad guy because he was the planeswalker that decided he was going to become a god, and he rose to god status.
Yep.
So they sent Elspeth to kill him, and then, you know, after she kills Xenagos, Heliod kills Elspeth, and, you know, twist.
Yep.
It was very Shyamalan-esque, but it was refreshing because that was very linear. You know, and Theros was a very, very linear set. There wasn't too much surprising going on in Theros.
Yeah, pretty much.
But Khans was definitely a good shakeup there. And I think coming out of Khans into Shadows over Innistrad is going to be another really nice change of pace, because we are going back to that more linear style of deck building. We're going back to the more... you know, the simpler mana bases, the more simple decks, and just, you know, seeing where that takes us.
Yeah, and we really need it right now, especially for more growth to happen, because now with, you know, the new dual lands that are out, and even the dual lands from Zendikar, they're not expensive at all. They're like, what, $4 or $5 a pop compared to $20 a pop for a fetch land?
Yeah, it's going to be good. I'm wondering, you know, there are definitely some cards that have started to skyrocket in value already.
Of course,
but,
they
did. Like the Abbey is the one that I'm thinking of the most. Like when it was spoiled, I think it was like a $5 card, and now it's all like a $21 card.
It's all stupid hype.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be a lot of that, and prices, you know, I'm definitely not a Magic Finance guy. That's not my field at all. There's always that spike of hype that makes prices go all over the place, and then they come back down. But those dual lands are never going to be the kind of expensive that a fetch land was. You know, when I feel like Magic, especially Standard, is a lot easier to swallow when you can get your mana base for a reasonable price and then fill in the more expensive cards as you go. It feels worse when you can pick up, you know, your playset of planeswalkers for cheaper than you can pick up your playset of lands, you know?
Yeah, that is always I agree with that there. It's more exciting that you have to, you know, maybe buy a playset of Avacyn, say they're $15 each, and you're spending that much money for a playset, and it's exciting because you're getting an awesome creature instead of spending, you know, $100 on
exactly
land. It's like,
and that's where all, you know, all deck building kind of begins with, you know, how good is my mana base? So it doesn't matter if I have, you know, the four Avacyns or four Sorins or whatever is going to be the most super powerful card. if I don't have the lands to back, if I can't afford the lands, then I can't afford the deck. But I can build, you know, if I can afford the lands, I can maybe build a less powerful version of the deck that still feels powerful because my lands come in on time, you know? So
yeah,
not having the fetch lands, not having these super expensive duels, it's going to be a much easier pill to swallow going forward.
Yeah, and I don't see these dual lands from Zendikar going up that much. I mean, I can see them being, you know, budget pieces for modern decks.
Yeah.
If you don't feel like spending in shock lands.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they will. I think their price is going to come up a little bit, just because that they do play so nicely with the Shadows Over Innistrad duels. But they're never going to top, like, you know, they're never going to top double digits in price. Like, there's just no.
Oh, yeah.
So the mana bases are going to be very reasonable price wise going forward.
Which is what we need right now. And we don't need $90 Planeswalkers again.
Jace Prince Prodigy.
It's like, even though I have a playset, I'm still like, it irritates me that it's that much money.
It's going to stay that way too, man. I mean, Madness and Delirium are a thing, and Jace is like the perfect enabler for those decks. So it's never, that card is not coming down anytime soon at all.
It's probably just going to go
up. It could. More. I mean, it's already, you know, I've seen prices way up there, and a lot of people are already dropping the Mind Sculptor references on price. And I'm like, if it gets that high, it's just, it'll make my stomach churn.
Yeah, pretty much. Trying to think of what else. I think one of my other, I guess going back to some decks, I think another favorite deck that I played was my blue-black dragon control during cons. Oh man, with Ashiok having two of those and then having Liliana Vess and Ugin. Oh man.
Ugin especially.
It was just nasty.
I mean, I think, you know, Ugin, while he wasn't my favorite card from Fate Reforged, it was definitely the card that shaped my deck building more than any other card that I owned. Ugin was just like, you know, he was just the control player's dream. And a big planeswalker that immediately stabilizes your board, takes over the game, and, you know, with it being colorless mana, it felt so easy to slip two Ugins into your blue-black control or your Esper Dragons control deck. You know, it just felt so nice.
Yeah, I never did go the Esper route because at the time when Dragons first came out, Ojutai was, what, $30?
Yep. Well, I
just refused to pay that much for Ojutai, so I just did blue-black where I only had six creatures in this deck, two Dragonlord Silmagars, one regular Silmagar, and three Icefall Regents, and everything else was, you know, four Planeswalkers, and everything else was all counter spells and, you know, Crux of Fate and any board wipes, and it was just, it was nasty. Like, I don't know how many times I would just get people conceding to me out of frustration because I would counter everything they do.
Oh yeah, and that was
it was,
yeah, that was the absolute beauty of that deck, is that you could play such few creatures, because honestly, a lot of times you wound up just not playing any creatures because all their stuff was getting countered.
Yep, and I don't know how many times that I would play against someone and I would pull, you know, put down Liliana Vess. And then they would either try so hard to kill her or just ignore it and let me ultimate with her. It's like, you realize you've got a lot of creatures in your graveyard, right? And they're all mine. It's like, I would just want to tell people, like, come on, do something about her.
Oh, man.
Or just even Ashiok. I loved playing Ashiok against Abzan players and just stealing their Siege Rhinos and playing their Siege Rhino. Oh,
absolutely.
Oh, it was so... It was the best feeling ever. And especially when you do her plus two and you see like two Siege Rhinos come off the top, you're just like, yes.
You just feel like you're doing it at that point, you know? Like I feel like, you know, and I did go the Esper route and build Esper Dragons, and that was one of the first times I remember in Khan's block feeling like I had that Abzan was not a bad matchup for me. And it was just like, I can hang with Abzan. And if I stabilize and drop a Jari and Lord Rogetide, I am not losing this game. You know, it just felt good to kind of play on their level for once.
Yep, I know exactly what you meant. I'd be able to beat Abzan with my blue-black control. I think one of my favorite... Oh, wait, I just lost it. I just had a memory of what I did, and I lost it.
It'll come back to you.
yeah, it'll come back. But, that's right. I just remembered. I think one of the best games I played against was... And this is one of the best games where the guy just scooped because I kept on countering everything. He would, what was he playing? I don't remember what deck he was playing, but it was like a mid-range. I don't think it was Abzan, but he would, like, I literally, every time he would try to play a creature, I would counter it. And I didn't even have any creatures out at the time, or I had one creature or whatever it was. I was just doing very little damage to him or no damage at all. I had at one point where I had, he just got so frustrated and I had six lands in my hand and he was about to play something, but he's like, you know what? I scooped. And then and as soon as he scooped, I showed him my hand. I had like six islands or something. He's just like, what the fuck? I'm like, yep. But I felt like I played it off so well because I was like doing my poker face too. It was the best.
That was the fun part of playing that deck. And I feel like we would be remiss if we went a time talking about cons and fate without mentioning the fact that that Delve is going bye-bye.
Yeah, that's right. It is. It was. God, that mechanic is so
busted. It was, but it felt so good.
Oh, man. I especially hated when I wasn't playing Jeskai or Control, if I was trying to do something else, and you see someone just start delving away, and it's like, oh, look, a dig-through time.
Yes.
Oh, look, another dig-through time. Oh great, another dig-through
time. There was just no better feeling. I just remember playing that Esper Dragons deck and being like, you know, just going into that end of turn dig through time and hitting another dig through time on that and just churning through cards. Like, it just felt incredible. And then getting cards like, you know, Tassigur the Golden Fang, where it was just like, yeah, I'll just have a Termagoyf. That seems fine.
Pretty much. And then I'll just let you pick a spell to come back into my head.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, do you want to give me this or this? Both are bad for you, but you got to give me one of them.
Oh, yeah. Like, I love playing Tassigur in my Grixis Delver deck. It's, if he survives just one turn, it's like, oh, you're done. You realize that, right? I'm just going to keep tapping at the end of your turn, and you're going to keep giving me back counters and burn spells.
It's just pure, glorious card advantage.
Oh, I love it. And it's, and, you know, I have to say the card I'm surprised at the most that ever made it into Modern was the Gurmag Angler.
Yeah, zombie fish!
I mean, I can remember when, you know, Fate just came out, or maybe it was when Dragons, when I started looking into Modern because I wanted to build elves, and I started looking at Grixis Delver, and I'm like, why the fuck is there a common Fate card here? He's like, he costs 7 mana, and then I start noticing there's a Delve theme. I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, well, shit. Get a 5/5 by turn two.
Basically, yeah, here's my 5/5 for one mana. That seems fine.
And then you just cry when they kill it instantly.
Oh yeah, I mean, but it was still hilarious. I mean, I remember, you know, with Gurmag Angler, that pro tour when Patrick Chapin brought that like Esper Delve deck in, they were playing Modern and he brought this weird janky Esper Delve deck that had four Gurmag Anglers in it and just everybody being like, what in the world is he doing? And I'm watching it and I'm like, this looks like the most fun anyone's ever had playing Magic.
Oh yeah. No, I didn't see that, but I can just imagine that would be fun. Was that before or after Dig and Treasure were banned?
That was... I think that was after Treasure Cruise was banned, but before Dig was banned. But that it was that Pro Tour. It was the I think it was actually Pro Tour Fate Reforged was the modern one. But I remember I remember that it was modern, and I remember that everybody was bringing, you know, the staple modern stuff. And then here comes Patrick Chapin with a with an Esper Delve deck with four Gromog Anglers and Tassigers, and it was just it was a glorious sight.
God, that's nasty. Oh man, you want to talk about shaking modern up? Why don't we bring back Dig Through Time? Let's just make Grixis broken.
Yeah, I you know honestly,
and Blue broken.
I think Dig Through Time was fine. I understand. I understand banning Treasure Cruise. I really do.
Oh yeah, that's an ancestral recall, yeah, pretty much.
I get right it. There. I totally understand. But honestly, I really felt like Dig Through Time was fine. I mean, it was powerful, and it made, you know, some decks very, very, very powerful, but it wasn't nearly as broken as Treasure Cruise was in more eternal formats. I really felt like it was fine.
Yeah, I can't really comment because I didn't play Modern or Legacy when it was around, so I was still a standard baby at the time.
The Legacy banning especially surprised me because, I mean, it was played... I mean, it was played in Legacy, but it was really only played in Miracles. And it wasn't like wasn't like Dig Through Time was the card that made that was making Miracles busted and of just a nightmare to play against. I mean, if we want to blame a card for that, it's Sensei's Divining Top. But I don't think they're think they're ever banning that card. But for some reason, they felt the need to ban Dig Through Time. And I didn't really get it. I mean, I do fully recognize the power level of Dig Through Time, and I love that card to pieces, but and it's sad to me that I won't be able to play it anymore anywhere going forward besides Vintage, and that's not happening. But
well, you can play it in Commander.
Oh yeah, that's true too.
Yeah, but it just doesn't feel the same in Commander.
Absolutely.
You're just like, there's so many other better tutors out there that you can find the exact card you want instead of having to dig for it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why do I want to look at the top seven cards of my library when I can just play Demonic Tutor and you'll get exactly what I want.
Or even even, you know, Dark Petition, look for another, you know, or any of the tutors, like Diabolic Tutor, not just Demonic, but hell, even Mystical Tutor, Worldly Tutor, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, those kind of dig me deep into my deck cards just aren't as fun in Commander, and it's sad that I won't get to play them in Legacy or in Modern. But I mean, like I said, I understand the power level, and I definitely understand the Treasure Cruise ban in both of those formats because, you know, Ancestral Recall. But I don't understand the dig ban. I really don't.
Wizards hates fun. That's why. They don't. They just don't want people having fun.
Obviously, I mean, obviously that's why they just keep putting out more and more and more and more and more cards. They hate us having fun as Magic players.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at Eldrazi. I mean, they hate it. They hated the Eldrazi fun so much they banned Eye of Ugin.
Oh, I'm not even going to comment on that.
You know, I think I told you this, like, surprisingly, Eldrazi never really made a hit in my meta for Modern.
Yeah, you had mentioned that. And honestly, it didn't make a big splash in my local format either.
I think it's because everybody knew it was going to be banned in a few months.
I mean, that was just a Garen goddamn tea. You know, I remember watching the Pro Tour with a buddy of mine from the shop. He came over and, you know, we were just having a couple beers and watching the Pro Tour. And as we were watching, we were like, that deck is really stupid powerful. Are you going to play it? Nope. It's going to get banned in a couple weeks. Yeah, probably. All right, we won't buy it. You know, it was just, we just knew right away this was not going to last.
Yeah, and that one guy, I forget his name, who was playing the blue-red variant, who was basically playing like Eldrazi Spy Spawner, Sky Spawner, and Drowner of Hope, you know, shitty ass cards you would normally
Vile
never
aggregate.
Play.
That deck
and
ran Vile Aggregate for.
Yeah, who plays that? No one does, especially in Modern. But it's like as soon as, you know, Oath came out, They're just like, boom, you know, we're just going to throw up Eldrazi everywhere.
It's fast mana, man. I honestly think that is, you know, say what you want to about Planeswalker, say what you want to about, you know, one mana draw three cards as being the most powerful. No, the most powerful thing in Magic is fast mana. It will always be the most powerful thing in Magic. And
yep, and it's always what people gravitate towards.
Oh, absolutely, because it feels so good. You know, it feels good to play a turn two Reality Smasher. You know, a turn Thought Not Seer into a turn three Reality Smasher. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah, there's a reason why Sol Ring is banned in Modern and Legacy.
There's a reason. There's reason why Black Lotus will never, ever, ever see the light of day again, because it's just fast mana is just busted.
I think they'll reprint it one day. I think they'll. I mean, not for you know, standard play or anything like that. I just think there's got to be one day they're going to cave and reprint those reserve list cards.
Yeah, I, you know, and honestly, we could probably do a full episode on that just because I have a lot to say when it comes to the reserved list.
Yeah.
But I really do. One day I hope to look back and say, hey, remember when they had that thing called the reserve list? How shitty was that? Yeah, I really hope one day I can look back on that and say that, but who knows?
Yeah, maybe they'll come up with a new reserve list, you know.
I hope so.
I don't know.
Rotate
some stuff off
that thing, man.
Yeah, I mean, God, I was looking at when I was trying to build my first Legacy deck, I've only got one mono green Stompy, and crap, when I look up the reserve list, there was one card I really wanted to put in it because it just seemed so fucking good, and I didn't know it was on the reserve list, and God, I think it was printed in Urza's. I think this is it right here. Yes, Argothian Worm. It's 3 generic, 1 green, and it has trample. When Argothian Worm comes into play, any player may sacrifice a land to put Argothian Worm on top of its owner's library. And it's a 6/6. So I was thinking, building this mono green Stompy deck, you know, just thinking, oh, I'm going to have Argothian Worm as a 2 or 3 of and play this motherfucker. And then I go look like, oh, he's banned. I'm like, no, fuck. So I had to redo my whole plan all over again. I mean, come on. I mean, yeah, that card is pretty busted. But, I mean, there's ways to stop it. You know, you just kill it. Or counter it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and it's not that it's from what I'm showing in its legality, it's legal in Legacy, but...
Wait, I thought it was banned. Oh, no, it's
It's on the reserve list. Not every card that's on the reserve list is banned. Those are just cards that they will never, ever, ever reprint, is the way that they've stated it.
Oh, so I'm really smart.
But, so, I mean, it's... Reserved cards are not necessarily banned, but they are cards that will never see the printing light of day again. Or at least that's the way Wizards kind of describes it.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because a lot of these cards, especially the ones from Alpha and Beta, which, I mean, let's face it, most of the cards on the reserve list are from the earliest Magic sets, are super cool. Like Argothian Worm... You know, that's a card that I had never even heard of, but that's a super cool card, and I wish that they could do something with it, but since it's on that stupid reserve list, we'll never, ever see it again.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at... this is just a random reserve card, Sedge Troll. It costs 2 colorless, 1 red... You pay a black to regenerate it, and while controller has swamps in play, Sedge Troll gains +1/+1. Like, why is that reserved?
I have no idea.
I mean, I don't know, but I don't want to get into that too deep, but it's
like
just...
I said, you could almost do a whole episode on that, man.
Yeah, just like looking at some of these cards, like, why is this reserved? It makes no sense. It'd be no issues reprinting, like, a card that costs 10 cents. Like, who are you going to piss off? Yeah.
I mean, and there are some that you just, you obviously can't, like some of the cards and cards like Chaos Orb, you know, that just that are just not fun for the game at all. But I mean, it's just I don't like the fact that there is a list of cards that will never ever see the light of day again. That's just not okay.
Yeah. And it's sad, and it's also sad because, you know, as the years progress, you know, these cards are either getting destroyed or, you know, no one's going to sell them and you're never going to see them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the older you go back, I mean, you don't see unopened packs of Alpha and Beta anymore. You like, those cards are going to become an ancient history.
And if you do, it's going to be worth like a couple of grand. Well, you're never going right to open there.
It. I mean,
oh, yeah. Oh, I'd fucking open it. Hell yeah. I'd let my six-year-old open it. Like, here, fuck it. Do whatever you want. Yeah, right. I'd be kicking her ass. Like, what are you doing?
What have you done? That's a Mox jet. You fool.
It's like, you're grounded forever. You stay in your cage and never come back out.
Anyone that's listening to this, don't call DCF on us. We're good parents, we swear.
Sometimes. No, I don't put my kids in cages, only when they're bad. Kidding. Yeah, because nowadays you say something like that, they're like, oh, you'll have DCF and the police on your door.
Immediately.
You know. Oh, God. But trying to think. I guess we can end this. We didn't really get into Fate too much, but it's getting a little bit late. Let's talk about our most hated cards in either set, and not minus Siege Rhino, because that's just
that's
too easy.
That's the obvious one. We can't do that.
Like, just try to think of the card that as soon as someone played it, you're just like, well, fuck.
I would say probably the biggest one for me. There were two of them. The first one I think would have to be Wingmate Rock, because there was never a time that somebody played Wingmate Rock and I felt like I could easily come back from that. That card was just so good, and you know it was a real groan tester for me. It was turn five comes around and they make some kind of funky attack. I'm like, well, I know what's coming down next. Here comes that Wingmate Rock. So that one got the groan test for me. And the other one, honestly, for me, it was Jeskai Ascendancy.
Oh, God, that freaking deck.
Yeah, it was, you know, it wasn't just the fact that the deck itself was so uninteractive and so just a pain in the butt. But that card just felt like if they ever started going off with that card, I just felt like there was nothing I could do. And as soon as they played it, I'm like, oh, well, here we go. I've got to race against this thing, which is just the most unfun thing to race against ever. So, yeah, Jeskai Ascendancy and Wingmate Rock would probably be two of the highest on my list, discarding Siege Rhino, of course.
Yeah. It's and the only time, because we had one guy that would play nothing but that Ascendancy deck, and the only time I could ever play him was when I played Control. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're trying to play Ascendancy? Nope. Get out of here. Oh, okay, you got Ascendancy out, but you're trying to play your combo piece? Nope. Get out of
exactly.
Here.
Exactly. And I mean, and that's the way that deck is even in the modern version of it. It's a very fragile combo deck. I wouldn't say that it's a super awesome combo deck. It's been a fragile one. But even when the funny thing about that card was, yeah, it was a combo deck, but at the same time, they could just play a bunch of token makers and run you over with 4/4 soldier tokens all of a sudden out of nowhere.
Yep, and that's happened to me too.
Yeah, it was silly. I mean, that card just made it turned races around so fast that if you didn't have a way to get it off the table, the game was just over. So that was a big groaner for me. If turn three came around, Jeskai Ascendancy. Oh God! All right. All right, we're going to slog through this now. Here we go.
Yep. Yeah, I think if I had to choose the cards that I hated playing against the most, as much as I love this card, I hated playing against Tassiker. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, if you could not take care of him quickly, you're just, well, I'm going to keep giving you good spells or, like, you know, really shitty spells. And, God, what would be my other one that I hated playing against? God, I think it'd probably be Crackling Doom when Dark Jeskai became a thing.
Yep.
Like, because especially if you're playing a slower deck that had 1 to 2 creatures out, and Crackling Doom came aboard, you're just like, well, fuck.
Yeah, and I think I love the card Crackling Doom, but it was definitely, it felt so harsh against you, right? Because it was like, not only are it's not like another sac outlet card. Like normally, like Foul Tongue Invocation, you know, that card was sacrifice a creature. Well, okay, fine. I can sacrifice this Thopter token, or I can sacrifice this, you know, measly thing, but I've still got my big thing. But Crackling Doom always hit your biggest thing every time, and it nugged you in the head for 2. So it was just, like, I can't even count how many times that I've been playing against a Dark Jeskai deck, and they've, you know, just cast Crackling Doom to nug me for that last 2 points of damage when I didn't even have a creature on the table.
Yeah. That's all I can say is just, yep. Oh, I'm looking at some of my cons cards right now. Another one that I always hated seeing is whenever they dashed in Kolaghan. Just like, you know you're in some fucking shit once they start dashing that in.
It was always so unexpected, too. I think that was the hard part, was that, you know, when that card was spoiled, even I remember saying and thinking, oh, that's cool, but that probably won't see play. And it was just one of those really out of nowhere, like, 5 mana, here's Kolaghan, what are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I can't kill it this turn. All right, well, it's going to go bounce back to my hand. And it's like, well, fuck, this Crux of Fate I have is going to do nothing now. I guess I'll try to counter it when it comes back down. It was a pain.
Oh, I know. And and Dash was even so good and limited, too, if you had a lot of Dash cards.
You had to get almost a critical mass of them, but when you did, they were fun. They were a lot of fun.
God, I was just looking at the draft decks. I had one Mardu draft where I managed to actually pull 3 Goblin Heel Cutters.
Ooh!
And no one was taking
Dirty
them,
boy!
I remember.
That's just not even okay! And,
yeah, so I would obviously hard cast 2 of them, then just keep on flashing 1 of them and just be like, yep, you're gonna not be able to stop me at all.
It's so true. God. Oh, man. I love that guy.
Oh, you know, I'm looking at this card right here, and I gotta say, this was probably... It was not played a lot when it came out. At least not that I remember in my meta. But it was definitely a card that once, as soon as you played it, and, you know, your opponent was not expecting it at all, they just got either really pissy or they're scooped right away and started the next game. Deflecting Palm.
Yeah, I forgot about that card. Oh my gosh.
I don't know how many times, because I played it in one of the variants of Jeskai that I built, because I built like 3 different Jeskai variants during before Zendikar came out, and one of them had Deflecting Palm. I don't know how many times I get people mad at me. They try to do, like, you know, 10 damage to me with 1 creature. Like, nope, sorry, and you're dead.
And that, I mean, honestly, that's exactly the art on the card. Even just says it perfectly. It's just that, nope, just whatever you're trying to do, nope.
God, it felt way better than a counter spell as a control player.
It so did.
Yeah, it's not fun to be played against, especially in Modern Burn. That it just sucks.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, but that was probably a very fun card. Any other cards that I really hated? Wingmate Rock, yeah, definitely. Fucking hated it. God, it's like, that's probably like right up there with Siege Rhino.
I mean, those two were buddies. I mean, that was the top of their most powerful curve, was Siege Rhino into Wingmate Rock. And it's just, they'll go down in history as best of friends, those two.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Trying to think of anything else. No, some of the other cards I hated were just in Theros that were so good with bonds.
Yeah, that is true.
But
I do remember... I mean, I didn't hate it just because I remember I played it a lot, but the original Silumgar, the Drifting Death, that...
Oh, I love that one in my control deck.
I loved it so much, but I remember that that card made so many Obzon players so salty just because that was the one card they could not kill. None of their stuff was big enough, and it blocked every Siege Rhino all day long. It was so annoying to play against. It's Silumgar the Drifting Death was an excellent, excellent tool against them.
Yeah, and they deserved it. Too. Yeah, they did. I mean, shit, they've dominated for how long now?
Long enough.
Freaking!
It feels like forever.
Yeah, it really does. Man, I'm trying to think of anything else. But yeah, I guess to end it all, it's definitely going to be a set I miss. Because, like, when I was doing, you know, Innistrad, Ravnica, like, when Innistrad rotated out, yeah, it sucked, but it was, you know, okay, Ravnica seemed really, or I mean, Theros seemed like it was going to be a pretty good addition, but then Theros and Ravnica turned out to be, what? Blue-white control a lot and mono-black.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot.
Once Theros... I mean, Theros just made everything stale. That was one of the worst standard formats that I can remember on history. But, I don't think that that's something we're going to have to worry about again. But this set was just such a breath of fresh air coming off of that Theros standard season where it was just mono-black and blue-white control and mono-blue, and that was about it. It was painful.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be missed, but I think it's at a time right now where, you know, especially with the shorter rotations, it's time to put
it down. I agree. But what would you, here's a question I'd want to ask. What would you give Cons and Fate and its standard season, if you had to give it a grade on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give it?
Throughout the whole thing, including Theros?
Yeah, I guess so. Just because during its standard season, so I guess that would be the tail end of Theros into Cons, Fate, Dragons.
It's kind of hard because I feel like I'd give it a higher grade before Zendikar came out.
I mean, that's fair.
Or actually before Origins came out, because just in my local meta, Standard was really, really popular, and then Origins came out, it started to taper off a little bit, and then when Zendikar came out, Standard was pretty much dead. It was the same 10 people every week, and it's and I think a lot of that had to do with the rising prices of fetch lands, and especially with Jace getting so high up there, and just the rising cost of Standard in general did not help it. So if I had to give it a grade 1 to 10, I might have to say between a 6 and 7. And mainly the reason why I give it a 6 is mainly because it felt like it did more damage to the format as a whole when Zendikar came out because of the dual lands. I mean, that's more of Zendikar's fault than anything.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm right there with you. I was thinking in my head about a 6 to a 7. And it is honestly just because of the fetches. I mean, I enjoyed playing with the fetches, sure, but I agree with you. I think having near perfect mana really did a lot of harm. And it made a lot of people not come into the game because it was just too prohibitive. Standard is supposed to be that launching off point, you know. And I don't think that this season of Standard was a good launch for new players at all.
No, definitely not. I don't know how many times like I would feel bad that, you know, see new players starting in Zendikar or Oath, and you know, I'm playing, you know, four color rally or Dark Jeskai or something, or my Eldrazi ramp or landfall, and I have all these fetches, and they're playing Evolving Wilds, and I'm just crushing them, and it's like, and you can tell on their face that they just look so downtrodden because it's like, well, you know, I'm new to this game, and am I going to get beat this badly all the time?
Yeah.
It's like, especially when they can't put in a lot of money. And, you know, people like us, we got the fetches as soon as they came out. But, you know, people who are starting now, they're not going to be able to get fetches at
exactly.
all. Or, you know, they have to pay a lot of money for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But... So that's like we were saying before, it's good that the mana base is going to be considerably cheaper.
Yes. Now,
especially with simpler decks. And I'm really, really hoping that Standard becomes popular again in my area, because Modern is, holy crap, becoming super popular on Mondays.
I don't think you'll complain too much about that, though, because Modern is such an awesome format. But honestly, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. I think this Standard is going to be very exciting. There's a lot of stuff that I've been keeping my eye on, just as far as brews that I've seen popping up, testing that I've done on my own. I'm super excited for this Standard season, and I think we'll see a lot of really cool, really interesting decks going forward.
Yeah, I hope so, man. It's like I said, I haven't really had any time brewing or anything, but I've got my Eldrazi ramp deck ready, except for the death caps, and from what I've done, just, you know, playing, what do they call it, goldfishing it, just goldfishing it's still just about as fast as it was with, you know, with the fetch lands and stuff like that. I mean, I never really used that many fetch lands to begin with, so I used a playset of Wooded Foothills, I think, and that was it. So even without those fetch lands, the ramping is still pretty fast there.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like you're ready to battle, man.
Hell yeah. It'll just be a couple weeks because everybody else will be drafting.
Yeah,
so.
There you go.
Yeah, because I got a PPTQ I'm going to go to on the 23rd down in Tampa. And yeah, man, I'll probably, if I can't come up with a cooler deck between now and then, I'll be bringing my Eldrazi ramp deck to see how it does.
Well, I'm hoping good luck to you, man. And honestly, I think it'll be a strong choice. That's one of the decks that I've had my ear to the ground on, and I don't think you'll have a problem at all with that deck.
Yeah, let's hope not. I just gotta, you know, play it.
There
decently.
You go.
It's the only downside. You gotta learn how to play.
Too true, man. Too true.
All right, man. Well, it's been real. It's been awesome. It's been and it's getting a little late for
me. Absolutely. So we'll call it a night. And it was an awesome time coming on and talking to you again, man. And can't wait to see what this new Standard brings.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, we'll have more stories.
Beautiful.
All right. All right, I'll talk to you later. All right, bye.